So there's been some unedifying scenes in the Facebook group today, Glyn. It's you know, this is supposed to be a family show, and there's a lot of talk in there about my bottom, and it's going to have to stop. I don't know where this has come from, but it's got to stop.
You and your obsession with bottoms.
It's not me. I'm going to name the shame. It's Elaine Perkins and Alice Cambray. It's all getting a bit cheeky in there.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Yeah, I think we might have to ban a few people.
Yeah, that's right, for the bad behaviour. Although, you know, it's partly our fault because we do witter on about how we like our well-shaped Wiltshire bottoms. Yeah. And on that note...
We won't be talking about them today, that's for sure.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden, mostly. My name is Glyn Coy, and I am the person behind Hidden Wiltshire. And with me this week, I have my regular Hidden Wiltshire partner and podcasting aficionado.
I did it again. I said, Paul Timlett. It's definitely Paul Timlett.
Okay.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening,
That's a good start. It's always a good start when you can remember your name.
Yeah. It's only going to go downhill from now on, isn't it?
It is. As usual, we start this podcast with a kind of recap of what we've been up to over the last 2 weeks. Given the weather situation, it's quite hard to do a lot of outdoor stuff at the moment, isn't it?
Not just the weather, it's blooming petrol prices as well, isn't it? I mean, we can't go anywhere.
I was going to say, I was going to send you a message yesterday because I nearly keeled over. I wasn't sure I'd be able to make the podcast this morning because I went to the petrol station to fill up my car and nearly collapsed in shock. The local garage had put the diesel prices up to $1.99.
What?
Yeah.
$1.99? Yeah. Sorry, you cut out from it. Where was that?
That was in Trowbridge. I won't name the garage because I don't want to, you know, shame local businesses. But I do know that they were shamed on the local social media site and the prices come down. But I was really quite shocked. £2 a litre.
Well, you know,
I'm going to walk everywhere now.
Yeah, I was shocked at $1.69, which is round here, I think. But $1.99 is just, bite my tongue. Shut up, Timlett. Yes. Don't say anymore. But yeah,
get the bike out.
Yep. Absolutely. We will have to
get the bike out. Get all those hot water bottles out and candles. They help.
Well, mercifully, it's reasonably warm at the moment. So, in fact, you know, being Rat Run Friday as we record this, and it's been raining, and it is quite warm, but it is raining. It's going to be quite noisy out there. So, there's nothing I can do about it. So, we'll just have to. If you hear hissing, that's the tyres going past. But at the moment, it's reasonably quiet. So, we'll see.
Yeah, maybe the weather's put them off a bit. It's a bit wet out there today.
Yeah. But. I've managed to you've seen from the Facebook group, I have been somewhere. Stu and I did a walk up at Aldbourne, so I put a couple of posts up about that. And for us down here in South Wiltshire, that was quite a trek to get up there. It took us about, 50 minutes, I think, to drive up there. So there's a post on the Facebook group, and I'm just conscious of the fact that not everybody who listens to this is on Facebook, and lucky them. But there's a new post up there, and it's a link to the blog that I wrote earlier in the week, which is on the website. Just remind me, can people get alerts when there's new blogs going up?
Yeah, if you go to the website and subscribe... Yeah. So on the front page of the website, thehiddenwiltshire.com, down at the bottom, you can leave your name and email address. There's a subscription box. Click subscribe and you should get an email notification pushed into your inbox every time there's a new post on the website.
Excellent. So, that's the way to do it. If you're not on Facebook and you don't see it there, or you're not on Twitter, you don't see Glyn's posts, that's the way to do it. Subscribe. But the Aldbourne, so the blog was called Aldbourne Circular route, I think, and the abandoned village of Snap. And that was a terrific walk. It was on the longer side, so it was over 10 miles. And I won't talk too much about it because I think it's definitely one for a future podcast, because there was lots to see there. But
yeah.
I do just want to sort of a bit of a tribute to our friend who we keep mentioning him on this show, but Andrew Rumsey, the Bishop of Ramsbury, because we were looking for the abandoned village of Snap, which dates back to medieval times, and it no longer exists. It's just rubble in a woodland. And Andrew had written about it, and also he did a little YouTube video about it. And seeing his YouTube video did help us, or just to confirm that we were in the right place when we were looking for it. So having seen Andrew's video, that was really, really helpful, and we knew sort of what to look for. But he also writes about it, and I'm going to plug his book here because it's just fabulous. I've just finished reading it. It's called English Grounds. Just go and buy it. It's a terrific book. Yes, he's a bishop, so there's God bits in there, but it's also about, and it's not just about Wiltshire, but it's because his diocese extends beyond Wiltshire down into Dorset, I think. So it isn't just about Wiltshire, and there are little bits at the beginning from when he lived in London, which is where the title comes from. English Grounds is a little street alleyway in, I think, Southwark, I think, when he used to live up there. But yeah, there's a lot about Wiltshire. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book about, you know, sort of, well, about all sorts, but about, you know, where he lives, where he walks. And it's, you know, I'm not a religious person by any stretch of the imagination, but it's quite a spiritual book, and it really did make me sort of think about things in quite a different way, and look at the countryside and the environment in quite a different way. And he seems to have we share a similar view of private signs. At one point, he sort of talks about seeing a private sign, and that was I think he said he needed no further invitation when he saw a private sign, and he had a quick trespass to somewhere he was he wanted to see. And I thought, there's a man after my heart.
Yeah, definitely.
So brilliant. I'm going to link to that in the show notes, the link to his book. But it's just terrific. It's quite intellectually, it's quite challenging. You know, I had to have a dictionary by me when I was reading it. I was telling Stu about it the other day, and I thought, what did he just say? I have no idea what he's talking about there, but it's worth it's well worth the effort.
Yeah.
So that's certainly the only extended day out that I've had in the last 2 weeks. There was another blog that I put up was about a Russian scientist called Vladimir Pasechnik. So that's worth a quick read, bearing in mind what's going on in parts of the world at the moment. And he was a Russian scientist who defected in the 1980s and came to live in my village in Shrewton. And from what I'm told, I was here, we were already living in Shrewton when he came here, and I didn't know he was here. Very few people knew he was living here or knew anything about him. But he went to work at Porton Down, not in the military bit of Porton Down, but the civilian sort of health side, and he developed a drug for treating tuberculosis, I think it was, if I remember rightly. And I realised that a gravestone that had been sitting in one of the local churchyards since his death in 2001 was actually the same guy. And I was always aware of this because it's this Russian script on the gravestone, and it's I sort of joined the dots and thought, oh, hang on, that's the, because there was a lot of talk about him after the Skripal poisonings in Salisbury. And people were saying, well, we've got our own sort of Russian defector here living in Shrewton, or we had. And turned out he used to live just down my road, a couple of minutes walk. So I kind of joined the dots and thought, oh, that's that gravestone in the graveyard. So there's a blog about that and a bit more information about him in there.
I've been spending a bit of time playing with my new toy.
Which one?
The 360-degree camera.
I was going to say, can you talk about it?
Of course. We're a family show.
We are a family show, if you're listening, Elaine and Alice.
Yeah, so I think I've just about worked out how to use it. But one nifty thing I've found is, you know, our external microphones we use, the Rode.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I can use it on the 360-degree camera.
Oh, wow. Well, it links up.
Yeah, and it links up, and you get really fantastic audio. And I've got this little device you attach onto the camera, so you can't see the receiver.
You can't see the join.
No, at all. So, yeah, it's going to be a bit of... And next time we go out and do an outside recording, we'll do a video thingy as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, the without the mics, is there any audio on the camera?
Yeah, but it's just not very good.
Not very good, no.
Well, it's fine in... reasonably good weather, but I took it out and it was a windy day and the audio was terrible, so I thought no, we're gonna have to find a solution with the our wireless external outside mics.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So yeah, we've got a working system now, so more videos on the way, I suppose.
if only we could afford to go somewhere and use it.
I know, that's it. Let's get on my bike.
Yes, I was because I going back to Andrew Rumsey for a moment, I thought, and I think we've said this before, wouldn't it be great to interview him for the podcast? And yeah. With the gear, the camera and the mics, because he does a little YouTube post almost every day. They're only a few minutes long, and he just goes to some wonderful places, and he's just got the most incredible way with words, and it would be great to do a
We should try and rope him into an outside broadcast.
Yeah.
In Westwoods or somewhere east.
Yeah, we may not be up to the kind of standards that he's used to. So. But, what else? Have you been anywhere else, or have you just been playing with your toys?
Playing with my toys and doing some local walks in the local woods and stuff like that. So not been out much. I'm planning to go out to Broughton this weekend.
Yeah.
I've got a route planned over there. I won't give too much away about it because I've got high hopes for it and I want to see it before I reveal. But over that way, there's quite a lot of interest. And again, this particular route I've got planned was suggested to us by a Hidden Wiltshire follower. He sent me an email about it.
Ah, yes.
That was a gentleman who now lives down in Cornwall.
Oh, right. Not the one I'm thinking of.
Right. So he'd bought a book and, as usual, I'm not very prepared, so I haven't got his name to hand, but when I do it and we talk about it in the future, I'll give him full credit. But yeah, he suggested this particular area on the outskirts of Broughton. So I'm going to do a bit of exploring, weather permitting.
Yeah. I mean, you told me where you were going to go and I won't spill the beans, but I did look at some photographs and I thought, wow, why didn't I know about that? That's incredible.
I know. Just one of those things. Again, it's you just need someone to nudge you.
Yeah.
So anyone out there that listens to Hidden Wiltshire and would like to give us a nudge about a little hidden part of their own locality that we should go and have a look at, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the closed group is for people who want to contribute walks and finds and things, and that's one way of doing it. But you don't need to be in that group. You know, the closed Facebook group, you don't need to do that. I mean, just contact us, just email us.
Yeah, you can contact us via the website. There's a contact form there.
Yeah.
And
so you don't have to do you don't have to contribute a walk. You can just, say, have you been to see this?
Yeah. Oh, as well, I did go away last weekend. I actually went to Somerset.
But that
doesn't count.
No. So we can't talk about that.
I went to Wells for the weekend and... but that doesn't count, so shocking, really.
It's irrelevant. Well, I went to London. That doesn't count.
Well, that's even worse.
Yeah. Well, it was.
Let's talk about that.
It was a hideous place. I'd forgotten how awful it was. But having spent 15 years working there. No, it was a lovely day. I went to see my sister in Teddington. Spent the day, big family day there. That was lovely. But God, I hate London.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
So did you see the spire that got blown down then in Wells when you went there?
I did. I took a little bit of a photo of it.
Yeah? You didn't take a photo of it because it's not there.
Well, exactly. I took a photo of the broken spire.
Yeah.
which literally looks very sorry for itself because the pointy bit is just lopped off completely.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we're laughing, but it was just, it was awful, wasn't it, really? I mean, saw the film of it. I think somebody took a bit of a video and was it?
Yeah, it was the video
down.
Of it falling off.
Oh, yeah. God.
But if you've seen the film Hot Fuzz, which actually was filmed in Wales, it was really bizarre because that actually happens in the film.
Yes, absolutely.
Lands on someone's head.
Was it? Well, it went straight through the top of their head and impaled them. And that is pure fiction, by the way. We're laughing because it's not true. But
yeah. Well, that's a classic thing from sort of, you know, certain films, that the whole impaled by something falling off a church spire. It reminds me of Patrick Troughton. I think it was in The Omen, where a great big, was it lightning rod or something, came down and impaled him at the bottom of the church tower.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor chap. Never mind.
Actually, I was thinking of John Pertwee. Patrick Troughton wasn't a Doctor Who, was he? Or was he?
Of course he was, yeah.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
So many of them.
He was the second one, I think.
Oh, was he? Oh, blimey, does go.
Yeah, before John Pertwee.
Because when Stu and I did the Allbourne walk, we finished off the day in a pub, surprise, surprise.
Oh, yeah, they filmed Doctor Who there.
Yeah, yeah.
John Pertwee.
The church and the green.
I think they stayed in the pub.
Did they?
Yeah.
Because we were sitting in the Blue Ball. It must have been the Blue Ball. Because we were sitting in there having a drink, and we were looking on the wall right next to me with all these pictures of John Pertwee.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's that all about? And then there was somebody else who was spitting image of Tom Baker, who was also Doctor Who, but he wasn't here.
Yeah.
It was another actor from long before Tom Baker was Doctor Who. And there was a picture of him in there. But somebody put on the Facebook group a link to a YouTube link to somebody, I think a Doctor Who geek had filmed the filming of the episode there. God, it was lame. It was because of the 1970s, I think. I mean, I think even our efforts were more professional than what they did those days. But it was comical. It was very, very funny.
Yeah.
So that's two Doctor Who connections today, then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And interestingly, I mean, going to Oldbourne, you weren't that far away from what we talked about last time, which was Ramsbury.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And obviously, there's all those World War II connections.
The Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers. He started off at Easy Company. We were in Oldbourne before they were moved to Normandy.
Well, it was after you mentioned that on the last podcast that we went on a looking for the connections. And again, not preempting the podcast, we'll do about this at some point in the future. But we found Stu and I found this stencil on a gatepost and a rat dangling from a parachute. And Stu found out later that it's a stencil of a Banksy. So,
yeah.
But I had no idea, but presumably somebody's put it there outside Auburn because of the
Well, I remember last year there was one of my Twitter buddies, virtual friend I've never met before, but we follow each other, is a gentleman called Nick Short, and he came to Auburn and hooked up with David Carson, our good friend from Alton Barnes, and they both did a sort of Easy Company tour of Auburn. They went around the various locations that you can see in photographs from the 1940s where they're stood in certain places in Auburn and sort of recreated the various scenes. It was a really interesting Twitter thread. Love things like that.
Yeah, I think that's I'm quite looking forward to doing that podcast because there's quite a lot to talk about. What else? I've been out on Salisbury Plain a few times, just dodging rain and bitterly cold for a few days, but really just sort of in the locale here. And
there's something going on the plane. I heard a load of artillery this week.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I mean, there's a massive exercise. I think it's been scheduled for a long time because you don't just do these things at a drop of a hat. And there's been a huge amount of movements, military movements around here. And I went out one of my regular walks, which takes me up to the top end of Parsonage Down. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of walk back down through the reserve. But there's an old droveway called Boughton Drove, which comes out of the village and then heads up that way. And it starts off just sort of farmland. And then you get out to the plains within, I don't know, a couple of miles. And they've it's just absolutely destroyed. And it's not a firing area. It's not a live firing area, but it's just the armour. In fact, I was out there, I think, last week, and there were I could see three AS-90s, the big military, the big artillery pieces, which are old tracked vehicles. It looks like a tank, but with a, you know, extra long barrel, extra long gun, and they were sort of parked in one of my favourite places. In fact, anybody's sort of been onto my website and seen the logo that I use on there. That's a place called High Trees out on the plains. It's relatively remote. It's a few miles from anywhere, and they were just below High Trees, and got the mess because of course it's so wet, and you've got these huge track vehicles, and they just chew it all up, and they've driven over poor John Young, the local farmer. He's a new bit of fence, and they've just driven over it, you know, just smashed it to pieces. And I'm not criticising, because that's, you know, it's a military training area, and that's what they do out there. But yeah, it's just a massive exercise at the moment. And
but there's been quite a lot of activity in the air around here. A lot of military planes, but loads of A400s, Hercules this week. Some F-16s, American F-16s have been 15. Flying over Salisbury Plain.
F-15s, actually, I think you'll find.
Oh, sorry, Mr. military plane
spotter. Mr. Plane Spotter.
I'll tell you what I have had as well over our house the last few weeks is these bloody noisy B-52s.
Really?
Taken off from Fairford. They've been flying over Trowbridge.
Yeah.
On their flight path. Quite a few occasions lately. So, yeah, people in Westbury, Trowbridge, Froome have all been saying on Twitter, you know, have you heard that bloody noise out there? And, these B-52s.
God,
an impressive sight, even though they're such old beasts.
Yeah.
Eight-engined behemoths, you know. Huge things.
I mean, they first started flying in, 1950s, I think?
The 1950s.
And it's just, I mean, they're filthy things, aren't they? The smoke that comes, you know, the exhaust that comes out of those engines.
I think it was two or three nights ago they flew back. They'd been down flying over Romania, right near the border with Ukraine.
Yeah.
And they'd flown from Fairford down there and then come back up and flew over Trowbridge and Chippenham. It was a clear day, actually, so you could see the two of them flying in tandem.
Yeah, yeah.
Impressive things, really. But
I mean, you know, joking aside, I did used to be a bit of a plane spotter when I was a kid, and I used to go to a lot of air shows and things, and I don't think I've seen one, a B-52, for about 20 years.
Yeah.
So that'd be fantastic.
Four of them at Fairford at the moment, and they're out most days. They fly long distances, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was watching one on a flight tracker. It basically flew all the way down to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Disappeared off the radar and then came back online and flew back up. And they didn't, at that time, they weren't flying over Europe, so they were going all the way around the coast of France and Spain, flying through the Straits of Gibraltar to the Middle East, and then flying down the Nile, down to the Red Sea. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I wonder if they have, they must have two crews on, because you can't keep flying. You have to
switch over. Refueling as well.
Are they refueling as well? Yeah.
Yeah, that, so they were refueled over Cyprus.
Mm. Yeah, I must admit, I was looking at Flight Tracker when it all sort of went horrible in Ukraine. I was sort of seeing what was flying about, and astonishing the number of sort of Falkland Island and Bermuda registered cargo aircraft, civilian cargo aircraft, flying back and forth between Europe and Moscow. I mean, there were just great lines of them. But I did see a couple of tankers come out of Bryars Norton and fly all the way over to sort of Poland and around there. I watched one of them on the tracker refueling a RAF Typhoon over the Baltic. It's just terrifying to see all this activity going on.
It is, and you can see that there are spy, well, not, I wouldn't say spy planes, but you know, the radar planes.
Yeah. Saw one of those, the Voyager thing.
Yeah, they're flying out from Britain most days over to the border with Belarus and Ukraine.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all very unhappy. On a happier note, I was reading some stuff earlier on between people or from somebody who works up at Parsonage Down, one of my chums up there, and it was quite interesting looking. Dave is a lovely bloke, but when he gets his teeth into something, my God, the detail. So we do botanical surveys up on Parsonage Down. We do it through sort of spring through to autumn, and we go, I think, once a month. Just sort of recording what we find in these different transects. And Dave's really got into this, and I think he's been on a botanical, on a botany course, and Dave's from the sort of IT industry before he retired, and after all the years I spent in the financial sector, I can drive a spreadsheet, but my God, what Dave can do with the spreadsheet. And he's written all these papers about Parsonage Down and going back over years and years, and he sent something out this morning about the impact of grazing and the impact on wildflowers, and sort of hypothesizing that, and not his hypotheses, but from quoting other scientists, that actually cattle can do quite a lot of damage to wildflower meadows. And I mean, it was just, a summary of all this work that he's been doing over months and months and months. So it's quite an interesting little debate that I think that will spark off. I weighed in before I came on here to do the recording. But it got me thinking about, how this area might have looked 150, 200 years ago, when there were less cattle, and certainly not the numbers of cattle grazing on the downs here, and how it might have looked. And I was sort of just dipped back into W.H. Hudson's The Shepherd's Life, which is about a Wiltshire shepherd in the early 19th century, which is another terrific book, which I've mentioned a few times. And I was just sort of wondering how this, our area, our environment might have looked then when there were less cattle and more sheep. Anyway. That's okay. It's probably enough. We'll get another complaint from Mr. Jenkins. I can feel it coming.
Yeah.
About how long it's taken us to get to the main subject.
Yeah, we better get on with our task in hand, hadn't we?
Yeah.
So this week we are going northeast.
Yes.
In Wiltshire, to the very tip, and actually might venture over the border. Sadly, but sometimes we just have to get where we want to go.
Yeah.
And this is a walk that you wrote about on the website not too long ago.
Tail end of last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And what you were trying to do was head up to an interesting little place called Inglesham.
Yeah, and specifically medieval Inglesham and the church there. So the walk is called Medieval Inglesham, or the blog is called Medieval Inglesham Three Counties Walk, which gives you a bit of a clue.
Yeah, that whole three counties thing again, because we've done it at the other end, haven't we? With Grave.
Yeah.
You've got Dorset, Hampshire and Wiltshire.
Yeah.
In the same sort of corner here, we're going up to the other end of Wiltshire.
Yeah.
We've got a similar thing.
So we've got Gloucestershire, Oxfordshire and Wiltshire. I think, was it November I did it? I can't remember, but it's when you said, how about we do this one for the podcast, I think I was, Stu and I were actually doing the Aldbourne walk. And it was like a spooky connection, because when we went up to do, because it was Stu and I that did the Inglesham walk, it was a really beautiful sunny day, terrible photography, just clear blue skies, no clouds at all. And as we were driving up there, we drove from Marlborough, Marlborough, sort of north up towards Swindon, because Inglesham is northeast of Swindon. And as we drove past the hills to our right, I said, oh God, this would be an ideal day to do the Aldbourne walk that I've been planning for such a long time. Although the weather wasn't, you know, again, not ideal for photography because it was clear blue skies, but it would have been beautiful doing the ridges around Aldbourne, and the views would have been incredible. And we did actually talk about diverting and going to Aldbourne instead, but we carried on and went up to Inglesham. So by the time we'd driven up there, so from, again, down here in South Wiltshire, it's quite a trek. It took us quite a long time to get up there. And so therefore the walk was only, I think, just over 5 miles. So it's a nice easy walk for those who don't want to do the 10-mile treks that I sometimes do. It's very flat. It's a very, very easy walk. Bit muddy this time of year, I'd imagine. So we went up to Inglesham, or beyond. We parked in Lechlade. Is it called Lechlade on Thames? Which is actually in Gloucestershire. So we'd already committed treason by crossing the Thames. Now, if you go and do this walk, there are a few parking options. Now, we didn't really know where we were going. I hadn't done a lot of research, apart from the church at Inglesham, which was really the objective for the day. So we drove over the Thames, over Hapenny Bridge, into Lechlade, and we were looking for somewhere to park. No obvious signs for parking, so we ended up sort of almost driving out of Inglesham, but we suddenly saw a car park sign. So where we parked was at the Memorial Hall, which is the north side of Lechlade, and that was a real gem of a find. Not because it's a particularly attractive place, but it's just a big car park, and it was almost empty, so it was a perfect place to park, really. And it did mean that we could park up there and then walk back down the road we'd come up through Lechlade, so we could have a bit of a look around. We walked back. I can't remember which road we were on. I think it must have been the A361. So we walked back down the A361, back down to the old centre. So we had the church, which is, can't remember what the name of the church is in Lechlade. I don't think I even wrote it down. So we had that to our left. Would have been nice to go in there and have a look, but because it was quite a long way, we didn't really have time. And we went round a sort of sharp right-hand bend, and I think that bit was, if I remember right, it was the A417. And I wrote about this in the blog. As we went round the corner, bearing in mind we just started the walk, there was this most incredible cafe called Sourdough Revolution. And we looked in, and we normally take a lunch with us, make some sandwiches, and so we're all, you know, equipped for the day, and we wish we hadn't, because we, you know, looking through this window, and it's basically an artisan bread shop, artisan bakers, and the window was just sort of, you know, the displays were groaning with all sorts of, you know, different breads, sourdough breads, and savoury breads and sweet bread. I mean, it's just, we had to go in. There was no way you could just walk past. So we went in, and we thought, well, we'll have a quick coffee, and then you're looking at all these different offerings on the counter, and you just cannot resist. So we ended up in there for about half an hour, where, if I remember rightly, I had a sourdough bread pudding, which I managed to eat about half of it. To the guy, I think he was the owner, he boxed it up for me to take the rest away, you know, doggy bag. And Stu had a banana bread, and the coffee was outstanding as well. It's just a brilliant place. And we had it to ourselves pretty much. And then these I described them in the in the blog. These two very elegant looking women, sort of shabby chic, you know, country style women, walked in and sat on a nearby table. And one of them sort of looked over at, I think it was Stew's, what he was eating. And she said, "What is that?" Demanding to know what we were eating. "Excuse me?" It was banana bread. I mean, she honestly looks as though we were eating something from Mars. She'd obviously never come across it. And anyway, they sat down behind us and really sort of shattered the peace and their sort of braying upper-class English accents. And they started sort of talking at the top of their voices about when the Eton half term was, so that they could bugger off to their houses in Cornwall. And so, I mean, I'm characterising. I mean, they're actually very nice.
Yeah, you must have felt quite at home.
Exactly that.
You mix in such such circles. So
just my kind of circle. Yeah,
exactly.
They were very nice. To be fair to them, I'm characterising them here, but they were perfectly pleasant, and we chatted. And anyway, we finished our coffee and escaped. From the cafe, there's some traffic lights on the street there. I remember coming out of the cafe and turning right, and there was the traffic lights. And this is the junction of the A417 and the A361. And basically, we headed back towards the towards Hapney Bridge, which we'd crossed earlier. Now, Hapney Bridge is sort of halfpenny, if you want to be posh about it, is a very, very old bridge, and there's a picture of it on the blog, but it's very narrow as well, so they have traffic lights controlling, you know, one way across, yeah, across the bridge. You can only get one one line of traffic through at any one time, so we had to recross that. And I remember there being a big pub on our right which looked over the Thames, and it's in the blog. I can't remember the name of the pub.
The Riverside,
yes. Oh, funny that. Yes, and the bridge was a toll bridge. So there's a toll house actually on the bridge, and apparently the toll was an old halfpenny, a halfpenny, hence the name Hapney Bridge. But it's not a place you really want to linger, because that road is very busy and the pavement was fairly narrow. So we kind of rushed across there, and I remember We dropped down some steps, which took us down to the Thames path. So we kind of did the walk anti-clockwise. So coming from the bridge, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but there is a map on the blog. So came down the steps and we turned right. So we headed west along the Thames. And some lovely views there, and you look back into Lech Lade, and there's some great big houses that were set back on the main street, with long gardens running down to the river. Some beautiful boats all moored along there. And a bit further down, there's something called, there was a kind of basin, a marina called Little London. And apparently this was the highest point on the Thames that a laden barge could reach. That's the furthest you can go up the Thames with a laden barge. So Lech Lade was a really important, and I know it's Gloucestershire, but bear with me, it was a very significant point, navigation point on the network in those days. And apparently barges used to come, I mean, through all sorts of convoluted routes as far afield as Cheshire and come down here. So it was a really significant point in the past.
So where does the border with Wiltshire?
Oh, God, I was hoping you wouldn't ask me. So you need to look at a map. I mean, we were back and forth across the border.
So the it looks time. To me,
it's on the river
now. It's on the river,
yeah.
So literally, you come across the bridge and you'll be in, halfway across the bridge, you'll be in Wiltshire.
Yeah, so where we were on the south side of the Thames, we were in Wiltshire looking across at Gloucestershire. Yeah, so as we did the walk, I mean, I lost count the number of times we crossed borders, because later on we were into Oxfordshire. So you're walking across water meadows, really. That's the best way I can describe it. And we were heading for something that we saw on the map called the Roundhouse, or Roundhouse, which was a lock keeper's house, dates back to 1780s, 1790s. So that was where we were headed, and we could see it off in the distance where we walked across these meadows, and there were, you know, I remember flocks of geese flying in, and there was they were grazing on the grass there. Lovely spot if that's your cup of tea. I prefer hills and stuff, but yeah, very, very pretty. So we headed off towards aforesaid roundhouse, which I describe in the blog as looking like some sort of Soviet era cooling tower. It was a really ugly building from what we could see. I mean, the environment around it, there was a footbridge over the river at that point, and beautiful willow trees dangling down into the river, beautiful setting, and then there's this really ugly building. But you can't, I don't know if you can get to it. We couldn't get to it from where we were, and it wasn't on the route of where we wanted to go. But again, there's a photograph of it, and it all looked a bit dilapidated. So it's adjacent to the canal. There's the disused Thames and Severn Canal, so it's next to that, hence the lockkeeper's house bit. But it's also sandwiched between the rivers Colne, C-O-L-N, and the Thames. So there's kind of water all around it. But we kept to the south side of the river there, and then deviated off. I guess we were heading east then, and we were heading for what was marked on the map as medieval Inglesham, or the site of medieval Inglesham. And there was a big old sort of manor house to our right, if I remember rightly. But you could see the earthworks from the old village. And it's right in the field. I mean, you could walk to it. You could walk across the earthworks. It was right next to where we were. But there's no sign. I couldn't see any sign of brickworks. And again, you know, harking back to the Aldbourne walk, and went to the abandoned village of Snap, where you do see the rubble from the village. All there is at medieval Inglesham is the earthworks.
Yeah.
And the manor house was an interesting looking place. It was looking a bit dishevelled as well, but there were all sorts of ribbons and scarecrows and all sorts of stuff in the garden. In fact, I took a photograph. I don't know why I didn't put it on the blog. But behind it, you could see the church that we were aiming for, the Inglesham Church, and that was really the sort of main objective for the day. So there's a little lane that goes from the road up into Lechlade, and there's a little lane that goes from there due west, and it's a dead end. It stops at the church. So you could, if you didn't want to do the walk, you could just head straight for the church, and you could park on that little lane. It's a byway, I think. So there were one or two cars down there. So if you just wanted to go to see the church, that's more than doable from there. So we got to the church, and what I'm doing, I'm trying to find my blog who set this website up? I can't.
Me.
I clicked.
It's supposed to be idiot proof.
Supposed to be what?
Idiot proof.
Oh, well, yeah, but there's idiots and there's idiots. Right. What I was going to do was, the church is just stunning, absolutely stunning. And we were so glad we made the effort to go up there. And I described in the blog when we sort of. We went up the little path, and I mean the church is Saxon. I mean, this goes back to what is it, 13th century? The structure. So we were standing in front of it, looking at this church, and the first thing that struck me was the bell tower. So the bells are they're not enclosed in a tower; they're just dangling from the roof.
Right.
So they're not protected from the environment, from the elements at all. And then you could see the rope which sort of which goes down into the church. So I'm looking up at this, and we're looking at the door, and then we, I'd read a lot about it, so we kind of knew what we were in for. So there was this great, not tense feeling of tension, but this anticipation. That's what I'm looking for, to what we were going to find. And the main thing was it going to be open? Because we're still sort of, I can't remember where we were in the various lockdown phases. Obviously not lockdown, although we couldn't have gone there. But, you know, would it be open? Because there's so many churches were shut down.
Yeah.
And we'd gone all that way and we're desperate to see it. Anyway, what I'm going to do is, if it's okay, I'm just going to read what I wrote in the blog. St John the Baptist Church, Inglesham, has its origins in the Anglo-Saxon period, although little remains from that time. The main structure visible today dates from the early 13th century. It was a favourite of St John Betjeman and was featured on the BBC TV series Churches, How to Read Them, where it was selected as Betjeman's favourite amongst the many hundreds of churches in the English countryside. We approached the porch of this squat, unassuming little church with some excitement. We were faced by what was little more than a series of ancient planks of wood joined together. No heft of ancient solid oak here. I pushed gently at first at this outer door. It was stuck fast. I leaned my shoulder into it and the upper half gave a little. The door was catching on the uneven stone step, so I lifted it clear and with a worrying, scraping noise, it slowly gave way to the porch within. Centuries of worshippers and visitors had descended these steps into the porch, wearing a slight depression in the stone floor. Some had lingered to leave their mark by way of graffiti carved into the stone bench. We were now faced by the more substantial inner door. I paused, half fearing that we would find it locked, having travelled so far. But the latch lifted and I tentatively peered inside. I audibly gasped. I had read so much about this church, but the sight that greeted me was beyond my expectations. So if you look at the website, you'll see the different doors, which, you know, being as old as they were just kind of works of art in themselves. So we went in, and I'll just read on. The interior of St John the Baptist Church was famously saved in the 19th century by local son William Morris. So William Morris, the Victorian kind of interior designer and designer of wallpapers and stuff. So it's famously saved in the 19th century by local son William Morris from the puritanical vandalism of Victorian restorers. Instead of the usual plain lime-washed walls of so many of our churches, this church retains many of the original wall paintings, some of which date back to medieval times. The colours are faded, but the original reds, blues and golds are still evident, together with some barely legible, ornate 19th century script. 15th century wooden screens and lattice work remain in their original position, the wood worn and fragile, as do the 17th and 18th century pulpit and box pews, still much as they would have been in Oliver Cromwell's time. So again, a load of photographs follow that. I mean, you really need to just look at the photos. It's just the most astonishing place, and I can sort of read this stuff, but it doesn't do it justice. So I'll read on. Stu and I wandered in almost complete silence, trying to take in the full extent of what lay before us. Every nook and cranny seemed to contain something worthy of inspection. The brass tomb covering depicting a medieval knight in armour on the floor in front of the altar, the Saxon stone carving of the Madonna and Child set in the south wall, and the simple recording of a date, 1699, scratched into the plaster in a corner. Somehow graffiti like this seems more acceptable than Harley Loves Chelsea. Eventually the atmosphere was broken as three more visitors joined us. They chatted away to each other, clearly as much in awe as we were. So anyway, I'll stop there because it will get boring otherwise. But
yeah, and I'd recommend if you can, if you're listening to this and you've got access to the website, have a look at the photos as Paul's reading that, because the photos give you a good flavour of just the sheer intricacy and history of the place, and it's clearly a place that's worthy of a visit in its own right. just to spend an hour or two just taking it in.
Well, it's, I mean, just you say an hour or two, because when we were there, we came out and Stu said, do you realise it's taken us 2 hours to get to this point, which is about a mile.
About a mile.
Because we'd spent so long in the church and I was taking a lot of photographs. And, and even that was, I mean, Stu wanted to get on and I could have stayed there all day.
Wasn't this church on a television programme recently?
I don't know, recently. It might have been.
I think there was something about Channel 5 with Tony Robinson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think maybe. If not, I'll cut this bit out. Because I'm talking rubbish. But I'm sure I saw something on Channel 5 about it. Anyway.
Yeah, it's ringing a bell. I think you may be right. So anyway, it was time to leave, and there was a lot of noise outside, and there was a helicopter from the whichever electricity company was inspecting the lines just outside the church. So it was a hell of a noise, and it kind of shattered the peace, really. But from the church, we walked up the little lane to the main road, and what you have to do there, the OS map is, I think it's wrong, but we had to turn right along the road, walk south down it for, I don't know, a couple hundred metres, something like that. And then you turn left onto another country lane. And what we were heading for something called Lint Bridge, which I had great expectations of Lint Bridge, L-Y-N-T it's spelled, because it crosses the stream that marks the border between Wiltshire and Gloucestershire at that point. And it was, they had roadworks. I think they were rebuilding it. So there was a load of workmen there, and the stream is little more than a ditch. So that was a complete letdown. Nothing to see here.
It's interesting because if you look at the map, that waterway, that Lint Bridge goes over, the waterway there leading up to the river, the main River Thames, and the waterway that goes to the left of Inglesham Village, they are the boundaries of Wiltshire.
Right. That's right.
There's a finger shape that goes all the way up to Lechlade.
Yeah.
Boundaried by those rivers. And it's a narrow stretch of land, so it really is.
It's a wedge, isn't
marginal.
It?
Marginal.
Yeah, it's a wedge into Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire. Yeah.
Oh, and just going back to Channel 5, I just did a quick Google as you were talking, and I was absolutely right, because you posted something about this in the Facebook group. You'd seen an episode on, it was on Channel 5, it's the Thames, Britain's Great River, and you'd seen Tony Robinson interviewing Andrew Zeminski in Inglesham Church.
Oh, that's right, yeah. What about this? Clean, I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. Never mind Channel 5 last year.
So, yeah, there was a little piece in October on Channel 5, the Thames, Britain's Great River, and it's probably on a replay thing, but you'll be able to see Tony Robinson interviewing our good friend Andrew Zeminski, the stonemason.
I do remember that.
In the church.
Completely forgotten, but I never said it. So, there you go. I was just waiting to see how long it took you to find that. So
yeah, you were just testing me, weren't you?
Just make sure you're paying attention. Because you did have your eyes closed earlier. And I sure heard a snore. Anyway, where were we? Lint Bridge. And then we were heading to something called Buscot Wick.
So what county are you in now?
Oh, I have no idea. Northumberland.
You in Oxfordshire yet? Or God knows.
I haven't got the map in front of me whilst I'm talking. So you literally are in and out of counties the whole way. I've no idea. But I think we're in Gloucestershire.
I reckon you're in Oxfordshire at this point.
Oh, is it Oxfordshire?
Yeah, I think it's north of the River Thames. You're in Gloucestershire. And this piece here, you're Oxfordshire.
Oh, right. Okay. But I've written in my notes here that Lint Bridge marks the border between Wiltshire and Gloucestershire.
You're wrong.
It should be Wiltshire and Oxfordshire, should it?
Oxfordshire, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I can see that's not far from Farringdon, and I've been to a music concert in Farringdon.
Oh, Farringdon is Oxford, yeah.
Oxfordshire.
And as we got to Buscot Weir, I'm sure we're back into Oxfordshire at one point there.
Yeah, I think over the other side of the river you're then in
Okay.
God, we sound like complete amateurs, don't we? We haven't got a bloody clue where we are.
No, we just make it all up. We always have.
This is supposed to be all about Wiltshire, and so far we've
talked about
Gloucestershire, Oxfordshire.
And Northumberland.
And a little finger of Wiltshire.
Oh, God. I try to remember what Buskett Wick like. I think Buskett Wick was just a farm.
Well, it's irrelevant because it's not in Wiltshire.
I know. But it was our route back to. In fact, do you know what? I thought this episode would be a really short one, which is why we blathered before we got to the main bit. But it's already about 3 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, hurry up.
So the next bit of interest, and I'm going to cut out all the instructions, but we could see in the distance something that turned out to be Buskett Old Parsonage, which is quite a grand house. And it was 17th century, apparently. And as we were walking past it, Stu said, I can hear American voices. And international travel was still pretty limited there. And we thought, it can't be. And it was only later on when I was writing the blog and I researched what Buskett Old Parsonage was, it was actually owned by a guy called Peter Francis Carew Stukeley or Stukeley, which there's a name to conjure with. I mean, that many names, posh. That's just plain greedy, isn't it? I mean, that many names. But he was, he died in 1964, but he was an art collector and he specialised in modern art. And when he died, in his will, he said that the house, and I don't know who pays for it and owns it, maybe a trust or something, that he said it should be rented furnished to American citizens actively pursuing literary, artistic or academic studies. So that's why we could hear Americans, and there was people standing in the driveway, and they were all American. Lovely house, though, and huge grounds, which you couldn't really see. It's all surrounded by great big hedges and stuff, but... so from there we went through the churchyard at I guess it's Buskett Wick there, which again was part of that is 13th century, but that was closed, and I've said in the blog it didn't seem to be very welcoming. Is that a word? Welcoming. Because it was restored by the Victorians, so I don't think it was restored very sympathetically. But there were private signs everywhere and CCTV signs. I mean, why on earth you put CCTV in this church? Maybe the people keep nicking the lead, I don't know. But anyway, it was closed, so we couldn't. We stopped there for a coffee, I think, and carried on. And just beyond it is Buskett Weir. And there's a whole load of National Trust trails that all join together there, because what I didn't realise was Buskett Park is quite a big country estate nearby. It's owned by the National Trust. But we wended our way across the... I have no idea whether we were crossing the canal or the river, because it all, you know, they weave in and out and there's little islands and you cross from one to the next. But we walked past a beautiful little lock keeper's cottage that's sandwiched in there by the weir. And then we got to Buskett Lock, which was just the other side. Hello, Daniela. Can she hear
me? Not here. No.
She just walked in.
Getting the cat bowl.
Oh, right. Is she thirsty? So we headed to Buskett Lock, and we sat there and getting a lovely spot, and we sat and had some lunch there. From there, at some point, we managed to get to the north side of the Thames. And I can't remember how we got there. It must have been through all those little bridges over the locks, over the canal and the river. But we ended up on the north side of the Thames, and we followed that across some meadows, past a pillbox, which was quite sure why that was there, but it was a pretty well-maintained pillbox in the meadows. And what we were aiming for was St. John's Bridge, where there's another lock there, and just before St. John's Bridge we crossed over back to the south side of the river, back to the south side of the Thames, and I think we had plans to stop at the Trout Inn, which is marked on the map. It's actually named on the map, unusually for a pub, Trout Inn, which we didn't have time, otherwise we'd have gone over there and had a look and had a drink, but that I did a bit of research on that, and it's that dates back to something like 1220. And it was, I think they were almshouses or something like that. But they were built, the building, which is now the Trout Inn, was built to house the workmen who basically were rebuilding an old wooden bridge over the Thames, and they were building a stone bridge, and it was built to house the workers, but also it then became a hospital or an almshouse. Mm. Dedicated to St John the Baptist, as is the church, Inglesham. I think certainly in the 1470s, when the local priory was dissolved by Edward the Fourth, it says here, this is from their website, the almshouse continued as an inn known as Ye Sign of St John Baptist Head. And then later it became the Trout Inn. But looking at the pictures of it, it looks like a fantastic pub right by the river there. Unfortunately, the other frontage is on the main road, but that's one for a sunny day, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, from there, we just follow the river back to Hapley Bridge, which we crossed, recrossed and back into Lechlade. So, you know, it was only 5 miles, as I said earlier. Simple walk, a bit muddy this time of year, I'd imagine. Another little plug, we dropped into a lovely deli up near the car park, actually, as we walked back up to the car park, called Cutler and Bayliss. And if you're a foodie, go in there. It's just fabulous. Make their own sausage rolls and pies. And,
sounds good.
Yeah, so it's one that impossible to pass by. But there you go.
Excellent. Well, there we go indeed. A walk of on Wiltshire that 3/4 of it wasn't in Wiltshire. It's
not sure exactly, Mike, was it? Time-wise, most of it was in Wiltshire.
You spent most of
the day in the church.
Yeah.
I'm right, you're
interesting.
So.
I mean, that church sounds fascinating. I'm going to go and have a look at
that. Oh, yeah. Must do. Yeah. It's probably best in the week. I imagine at weekends, on a sunny day at the weekends, it'll be pretty busy, I would imagine. It's one of those places where it's nice to have one to yourself, as we did for most of the time.
Okay, good.
Alrighty, we better
wrapping
stop
up time.
We? Thank you, Steve Dixon. So the piece today is called Fragile. I picked that because it sounded like it was recorded inside a church. Well, certainly part of it did. We've not used that piece before, so that's thank you, Steve. Who else have we got to thank? Nobody.
Nobody. Ourselves?
Yes. Thank
Thanks
you, Glenn.
For turning up, Paul.
Oh, yeah. makes a change to be on time as well. next episode. No idea. But we'll find something.
We've got some things in the burner.
Yeah, yeah.
That we can use. We'll be doing some outside broadcasts soon enough.
Yeah, it'd be good to get back to that.
So one in the calendar towards the end of the month.
Got what?
Can you remember that? Going to meet a man about a long barrow.
Yes, I didn't remember. I have now. Thank you. But that's not outdoors, though, is it?
Yeah.
Are we doing? Oh right. I thought you'd sent a Zoom thing for that.
No. We're going to meet on location.
Oh, excellent. Even better. Because I thought, why aren't we meeting him?
We are.
Brilliant. looking forward to that. Yeah. So head to the website for the show notes and links. Not too many links today, but I will link to Andrew Romsey's book and, of course, the online shop. And if we don't sell some more books, we'll be going out banging on the doors, door-to-door salesman.
Yeah, need to shift these books because I need to get my hallway back.
Yes.
I'm sick of the pile of boxes. But I was just thinking, though, it would have been funny if I'd have turned up to meet Tim Dorr at his Long Barrow in a couple of weeks' time. And you logged on to Zoom.
So I was sitting at home. Where is he?
Where's everybody?
Yeah, they're late. Well, it wouldn't be the first time. But
No.
All right, then.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks, as usual. And stay safe. And, we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Bye now.